Welcome to Gonkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this episode, we've reached the pivotal year of 2013, featuring Autechre's 11th LP, a fan favorite for sure, XI, and its accompanying EP, Elevent. As per usual, we've worked a bunch of your emails into this episode, but we'll get to the rest on a bonus listener email episode next week, so keep the XI and Elevent takes coming, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Our next proper episode, 2 weeks from now, will be on the first installment of AE Live. But here's where things get a little weird. AE Live was obviously released in installments, the first two in 2015 and the last, a big one, in 2019. However, because it covers the 2014 to 2015 tour, we think it makes sense to cover the whole thing now rather than returning to that last installment later on. So we'll be discussing all 28 and a half hours of AE Live next time, and we want your opinions. GonkcastPod@gmail.com. Just to be clear, though, we are not discussing the 1-6 tour yet, the live recordings released as AE Live 2016/2018. We'll get to that later, and it will also screw up our nicely organized chronology, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Anyway, let's get into today's topic. What background info do we need to know about XI, Dan?
Yeah, Autechre released XI, their 11th album, on February 7th, 2013. A little late, according to Sean, since, quote, XI is a winter album. And just in case you didn't put this together for yourself, it's called XI because XI is the Roman numeral for 11. Anyway, XI grew out of the software that Autechre designed for Oversteps and the Oversteps Tour. It was apparently created entirely in Mac's MSP, though in some various interviews, the guys mentioned sampling a lot of found sounds and field recordings, like bits of city life, wood, rubber, and direct recordings of rain on certain objects. It also marked a return to the process of editing down very long jams. The finished product was still over 2 hours long, making it the longest Autechre LP up to that point, but the guys have clarified that they think of XI as a box of four 12-inches. Elevent is supposed to be interchangeable with any of those 12-inches, but we'll get to that in just a little bit.
Yeah, critical reception to XI was pretty starkly divided, I would say. Pitchfork trashed it in a 5.9 review, saying it's as much a frustrating obstacle course as it is a grueling marathon. Resident Advisor was slightly warmer, saying it's like a jigsaw puzzle, confounding, occasionally satisfying, and forever keeping you guessing. In contrast, The Wire heaped all kinds of praises on the album and was super prescient, actually, in saying they've created a work which reveals renewed faith in their own identity and which should act as a compass in the years to come. Likewise, Anthony Fantano of the Needle Drop, who was honestly dunking on Pitchfork an awful lot in this period, must have turned a bunch of new fans onto Autechre when he gave XI a strong 8. On that note, XI is currently at a 3.57 on Rate Your Music, but it just keeps creeping toward that 3.6 to 3.8 range of Autechre's most beloved albums. So Dan, I've always got to ask, what is your sense of XI's status nowadays?
It seems like the fan favorite, you know, like the real fan, the kind of people who are listening to a Autechre podcast, you know. You know, we always talk about how Tri Repete is, you know, the, like, you know, every man's kind of Autechre record, but I feel like XI is the one that you know, the deeper fans dig a lot, you know, on the Autechre subreddit, you know, I see a lot of XI flares, you know, I always talk about. And if I remember correctly from last week, didn't it get second place in the Survivor series?
Yeah, barely second place, almost won.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's the vibe I get, that it's a huge fan favorite. It does seem kind of like I was just describing there, that it was a big turning point, like, for Autechre sort of critically, and maybe even grew their fan base, or like brought on a whole new fan base to Autechre. So it's kind of got this like Tri Repete like status, I think, where it's kind of like the classic of this generation, like the urtext of this generation, where all the albums to come are sort of like, it started with XI, you know. So what is your personal history with XI?
Yeah, I think XI is probably around when I started becoming like a big fan. You know, I've talked about it before. You know, I like had listened to Amber, Tri Repete, you know, those records, and I liked them. I was aware like of Oversteps, but I, you know, I've never really dug that record and stuff. But you know, by this point, I was checking out all their new albums, and you know, I came to like XI a lot, and I think it's really what got me like deeper into, you know, looking more into the back catalog and you know, into those records I missed up to that point.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. Where like this XI kind of brought me back into the fold. You know, I was. When I was first getting into Oddtekker, it was around like the time of Choristus, as I've said before. You know, I kind of just decided at that time that Oddtekker was great in the 90s and then kind of hit or miss ever since, you know. And then I heard XI and I loved it so much that I decided I was wrong and that every album must be good, you know. Like, I just must have been mistaken. That's how good XI was to me. I was completely obsessed with it. And yeah, it sort of like took me to that next level of fandom. And we'll get into all the reasons why. That being said, though, as I was thinking about it, I haven't listened to it a ton lately because it feels like, and we'll definitely talk about this more, but like it was this juggernaut of an album, like this huge statement. And then it was immediately dwarfed by all of the albums that came after it. So it kind of just feels like, I don't know, quaint, like this cute little tyke or something, the little kid brother to some of the other albums we're going to get. And so I just haven't really like gone back and revisited it. So I was really excited actually to revisit it for the first time in a while. So how would you describe the overall sound of XI? You know, the sound, what sound palette are we working with here?
I think this is where we get into that, that later day Oddtekker sound palette that, you know, we always talk about. And, you know, the sound design thing, you know, this sounds, like it was made on a computer. Like, you know, we spoke before about how one of our favorite things about Oddtekker is like hearing these noises and stuff that like you don't have the slightest clue how they made that or how they went about, you know, putting that together or whatever. And I think that like really comes into the fold here. You know, this album being fully, you know, made on Max MSP, or mostly made on Max MSP and all, which I know things in the past have, but it just feels like they've you know, gone full force with it here. But as far as like the sound itself, it's kind of like a really, you know, kind of dark album, I think. He talks about, or Sean talks about, like the sampled rain and stuff, which I don't think it's not like very obvious where that rain is, but it does sort of like make me think of like, you know, a rainy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was listening to like Burial Untrue a bit like last week and stuff, like just on my own. And it kind of, it maybe just because I was listening to it, but it sort of like reminds me of, you know, that feeling of a record, you know, like that's the most like rainy day kind of album, you know, I can really think of. And it kind of gives me like a similar feeling.
Yeah, we got some emails on that exact topic, actually. We'll talk about it in just a little bit. Oh. But, you know, you're right. It's got like a dark gloominess to it. It's got a real denseness to it, like kind of like Burial, where it's just like a real like dense wash of sounds. And, you know, I had sort of gotten used to, especially on Oversteps, right, where you could sort of pick out like every little piece. You could sort of zero in because it was so clean and so sharp, you know, that like bright FM synthesis. Here, I mean, it's so dirty. It's like such a gritty album. It was really surprising to me this week, actually, because when I first heard this back in 2013, I thought nobody has ever captured like how a computer thinks until now. You know, like this is the most insight I've ever gotten and probably ever will get into how a computer thinks. And then listening this week, I was like, actually, it's pretty dirty and gritty, and like there are a lot of, you know, not in a bad way, but imperfections to the sound.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's got like a rawness, and I just don't think of it like that anymore. Like this absolute digital like wilderness, it feels kind of like you were saying, like a lot like gloomier and like more shadows, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. You know, it's such a strange thing. It's like a digital feeling, but yeah, I mean, normally like when you think of like, you know, computer music, you think of like very clean, you know, very, you know, not recorded like in the real world, you know, like directly into a computer or something. And yeah, this doesn't sound like that at all, but it still feels like it's just such like a, it creates like such a, like a alien feeling. I think it's very clearly like not instruments, you know, of this world. But it doesn't have that like clean sheen of like, this is obviously, you know, just computer beeping and booping or whatever, you know. It's such a strange, like, you know, alien type of feeling, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about that a lot because honestly, listening to it, I kept feeling like it was almost the opposite of what I used to think, which is, it sounds actually quite mechanical, like quite physical and analog in a lot of places with that kind of dirtiness. You know, there's a lot of attention to stuff that like Autechre does here and there, and has done more often in some periods than others, but making sounds sound like physical objects that are in a room or something that are being recorded. It's got that kind of dirtiness. It's got a heaviness and just a physicality to it. You know, another thing that's really striking about this record is kind of the slowness of it. You know, the beats are like, you know, we're a million miles away from like the hyper speed of Untilted. You know,
oh,
it's
yeah.
like these slow kind of lurching, like marching beats. And, you know, there's a heavy physicality to them, which I almost want to say I haven't heard since like Tri Repete or Chiastic Slide.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think physicality is a good description of it. It's so weird, like I said, because, you know, it does like have this like sort of industrial feel to it. But I think when you think of like industrial music and all, like it's sort of like sounds that sound like, you know, a certain kind of machine or something. You know, it's almost like sounds you can place in real life.
Right.
It's like we're getting that, but with, you know, the machines of another world or something, you know. It's just this strange mix of the two, you know. It feels analog while being so like digital, you know. It's just like a very like contradictory record, I think, all throughout.
Yeah, I agree 100%, because like I kept thinking, like, God, this sounds like really mechanical, the way that kind of Tri Repete did. But then there's a certain like fluidity to it, like kind of a liquidy quality to it that is really, you know, contradictory to that kind of feel. And I just started thinking of like machines, but machines that are not rigid at all, that can kind of like move and flow. And it's just like, I just realized like we are so far from anything that could exist in the real world. And like, that's what's so amazing about this album. You know, so something like Earlight Get Zero, the second track here, it's got this kind of like, I mean, it's got like a slow lurching kind of slamming quality that's, you know, kind of mechanical, kind of Tri Repete-ish. But instead of like just slowly gathering steam over the course of the track, like a lot of tracks on Tri Repete do, it kind of like gets picking up steam, like it's going real fast, kind of like slows down and like melts into just ambient drone, and then sort of like slowly coalesces, you know. So I keep thinking of like physical machinery, but I don't know, liquidated or something.
No, I mean, it's so like difficult to explain. I think, I mean, like I said, I think this is where Autechre like really comes into their own, in this like creating sounds and worlds that you've never heard before, you've never experienced before. You know, there's been touches of it up until this point, but like, you know, there was always like something to ground it. I think here, you know, like the track you're just talking about, it really like sounds so mechanical, but then you're right, like this, the way it morphs and sort of melts is just like such a not earthly you know, type of thing. It's honestly like really hard to describe, which isn't great for a podcast.
I know, I mean, but it's like the fun of this album, you know. And this is like one of the hardest ones to pronounce the tracks, but Rune Repic is like, it's got sort of like a stuttery kind of almost old school quality to like the drum machine, like this kind of like weird like stilted pummeling kind of thing. But then it's got like these super sci-fi like laser sounds. And then it starts to sound like modem dialing sounds or something. And I just kept thinking like, this is like the future and the past at the same time. And I just started feeling like that about every track. But I also want to add that, you know, I think you're totally right about the emphasis on sound design here, something we'll definitely talk more about. But, you know, you think of something like Blade Aloris, or however you pronounce that, like the kind of hiss, the static, whatever that is, you know, it sounds like maybe if you just left the distortion pedal on.
Yeah.
And like, that's, you know, but it's been converted into a rhythmic pattern. And it's like, there's a lot going on in that track, as we'll discuss, but the main thing, the star of the show, is the weirdness of that sound. What is that sound? Or like the track Nodesh, right? It's really the sound of that synth that, like, there are a lot of parts. This is like the first record where I wrote just like, what the fuck, in my notes a lot, because I couldn't think of any way to describe it. But you know what I mean? It's the sound of that synth. It's not like, that's the most important thing about the track, is just the sheer sound of it. What is that sound?
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think like they play a bit with like on Nodesh, or however you say that, you know, they play a little bit with like the stereo panning, which, mm-hmm. which, you know, they've done a little bit, but I mean, things like Choristus, you know, they didn't at all. You know, we talked about how those were, you know, sort of just stereo recordings that they had to, you know, make do with. But like that, you know, it's doing that, like, as that like sort of like video game sounding synth like comes in.
Yeah,
it does this. I don't know, like a wave between your ears, you know, like a really stilted, like left to right kind of thing. I think it's, you know, it's really neat.
Yeah,
but you're right. You know, it's the, like, the best thing about every track on this record is like some sound. You know, it's always the sound. Not to say that there's no, you know, good beats on here or anything like that. I think there are. I think there's some of their best, you know, beats are on here. But it's always like there's always a, like, you know, some sort of sound to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're gushing, and we've got a ton of emails that I want to get to. You know, listener Andy wrote in with his own overall description, saying, XI is like walking through a futuristic city on a rainy day. It feels very human, though. And listener AT wrote in to say that at the time of XI's release, he had just moved north and was experiencing his first cold and miserable winter. He says the cold, gray, snowy, and bleak landscape, or cityscape, rather, is indelibly imprinted onto the album for me. And then no matter where he listens, the album still conjures this gray, dreary, industrial imagery. You know, we've seen that Sean calls XI a winter album for some reason. So do you hear any kind of like mood or humanity here, or is it nothing but code and computers, as a lot of people seem to claim?
No, I think there's definitely like a humanity here. You know, I've said it before, but I live in Florida, so I don't really think of it as like a wintry thing. But, I, you know, when I say rain, that's sort of like my version of a winter, yeah, I guess, right. You know what I mean? And I definitely say, you know, it's kind of like a easy to make comparison or whatever, but it like sort of reminds me of like, you know, Blade Runner and all, you know, like this just monolithic, you know, rainy city, and the, you know, industry and robotics, you know, surrounding like that, you know, that like, yeah, is this mix of humanity and you know, whatever not humanity is.
Yeah, I mean, I think like all that imperfection is what makes it feel like human, you know. It's got a very,
no, exactly,
it's got all those, like, all that, you know, dirt and grit on it. And you know, we'll talk about this more, but there's parts that feel very jammed to me, you know, like very exploratory and improvisatory, you know. And as far as the mood, yeah, I mean, I just feel like the same way I would feel about, you know, like the city in Blade Runner or whatever, like sort of a dread, you know, like an overwhelming, I mean, this is a very dark and menacing album, I think. I want to ask, what do you make of the album art? There's a very short description on the Designers Republic website, which says, deserted sci-fi cities, hey, Dalek typography, brutalism overrun by nature, human remains, and that it's basically abstracted E, X, A, and I letter forms as redacted architectural plans or elevations or maybe maps. Listener Anton writes, we as humans are probably just the middle piece between life and sentient computers. The album art captures that well because it shows seemingly random pixels, but every time I look into it, I see a face of a half-digital, half-human person. So How do you see the album art as sort of related to the themes and mood we're discussing here?
I really like the album art on this. It reminds me of like QR codes, you know? But I just think I really liked like one, you know, from this point on, basically Ottekker and Designers Republic, like just work with like shapes basically, you know, and it starts here and I'm all for it. Like I really dig it. I read that earlier and I was trying to like figure out where the EXAI is and right. I 100% cannot find it. I don't see that at all. As for like the face that the listener describes, I can sort of see that. You know, it sort of looks like there's like a nose kind of in the middle and eyes to the side of that and weird distorted mouth, but you know, obviously like very kind of digital. So I can see that. I like his between life and sentient computers. That's a bit spooky.
Yeah, it's very very like dark. Just that. Really, the only reason we existed was to get computers up and running, and now they'll take over from here. The album does kind of have that sort of nihilistic spirit, I feel like, but I really like the idea of sort of looking at it and thinking of it as like pixels or some kind of computer code or QR code or something, but then also this idea of like maps and feeling like, or are we looking from above at a city and like this is the grid pattern or something of the city? I don't know. There's just like a lot to think about in just like a very simple, minimalistic kind of thing. And I just feel like it does give me all the same feelings kind of that the music does. Now, we got several emails about genre. Listener Jordan notes that everybody thinks of XI as a very hip-hop inspired album, but that he hears a lot of UK club music too. The record has a dubstep influence to it. It's not the brostep kind that was popular at the time, but the club type of dubstep like Banga and maybe even a bit of grime. Listener Richard agrees, saying, I hear a link to dubstep's precursors back on the London scene when it was called Dark Garage. It's from that urban, sprawling, eerie, two-stepping, dubby, shuffling, creeping snare stuff that people like Burial emerged with. And there are plenty of creeping snares and two-step rhythms on XI, but I also hear something like an expansion and explosion of the atmosphere of dub. With Burial, the floaty, reverby space of dub reggae gets transformed into these dreamy urban ambiences. But on XI, it sounds like they're taking that concept a step further and creating urban soundscapes for alien planets and impossible nightmare cities. There's a lot to unpack there, but do you hear this as like Ottekker's return to hip hop? You know, it's notable that in the Ask Ottekker Anything, Sean describes Rexon as an 80s hip hop homage. Or is it more like an embrace and exploration of current sounds, or maybe a bit of both?
I think it's a bit of both. You know, I think there's definitely like that hip hop sound to it. It's like I was saying before, you know, like this album's like so much about like sound design, but not at the expense of, you know, listenable music and beats and stuff. You know, it's not just all noise and all that. And in fact, when people say that, you know, it's just cacophonous noise and stuff, like I don't see that at all here on XI. You know, I feel like it's one of the, you know, more listenable, you know, experimental things. Rexon, like Sean says, it like really does sound like a 80s kind of hip hop song filtered through this like weird, you know, robot, computer program lens, which is
and it's amazing too, because like that track is like, it's like a slamming 80s hip hop track, and then like without you even realizing it, it becomes like a drone track. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like I thought I was listening to Mantronics and somewhere along the way it switched to like Pauline Oliveros or something. I don't know how the fuck that happened. But yeah, I mean, I feel like just overall this record does have a pretty slamming kind of hip hop quality to it. I mean, it is often pretty laid back, like I was saying, not always. And it's got a lot of funk to it, which I hadn't heard them, you know, laying that thick funk since like Envane or something, really. But then there is a lot of like wub-wubbing from dubstep and stuff. I almost decided that like SPL9 is like an exaggerated form of dubstep. Like, oh, you like Skrillex, you little bitch, try this, you know, or something. Cause it's just like grinding, shredded sounds, like ripping your head off. And it has that kind of like that really Burial style, thing that listener Richard was describing, with like that kind of just dreamy urban atmosphere. I mean, you were talking all about that. So it is interesting that they seem to be maybe tuned into and maybe even inspired by what's currently going on, even though they also seem to be kind of returning to their earliest inspirations in some ways.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect like melding of those two kind of things, which is, you know, so great. You know, one of the great things about Odd-Tekker is like taking such different ideas. You know, I think 80s hip hop and you know, grime and you know, garage, whatever, and everything is like crazy to you know, meld those so successfully, and not only just meld them, but like expand upon them and create something, you know, unheard of up to this point.
Yeah, it kind of has that quality of like, you know, how we're always talking about how it's really hard to hear Odd-Tekker's influences because they like synthesize mm-hmm. them into something so fully. And it kind of feels like that is really shining here, like that skill, because you could say like, oh, that's kind of like a dubstepy quality or something, but it is so wholly like XI. It's a little different actually from the last couple Odd-Tekker albums, which have had like clear signposts like, oh, that's very acid, or that's very techno, mm-hmm. or, you know, that's very classical or something like that. This almost feels like a return to form in the sense of like synthesizing so perfectly. I also think it might make a little bit of sense to talk about the context now a little earlier than usual. Listener Joe noted that a bunch of his favorite albums came out this year, including stuff like Boards of Canada's Tomorrow's Harvest, Kanye's Yeezus, The Knife Shaking the Habitual, that awesome Dark Side album, The Field's Cupid's Head. It just kind of feels like everything was getting pretty dark and gloomy at this time. Like, these are all pretty dark albums. So do you see XI as kind of fitting into that wave of darkness in the early 2010s?
Yeah, I kind of do. You know, that's strange. I don't remember what was going on in 2013, but I could guarantee it wasn't as bad as, you know, mm-hmm. 2016 through 2020. Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely fits into that.
Yeah, and I was thinking too about like, you know, trap is kind of on the rise mm-hmm. here at this time. And that's like very dark and gloomy. You know, every song is about like doing too many drugs and like, or, you know, you're just ruining your life or something because you have sex on Molly too much or something like that. You know, Drake is getting big at this time and all of his shit is like sad as hell. And, you know, I sometimes thought that like there are a lot of tracks here that have this kind of like rolling bass groan or something that reminded me of the atmospherics of trap. You know, I feel like trap is kind of, it's like run its course now, but mm-hmm. at this time it was like really exciting because it's genuinely kind of experimental if you think about it. You know, it's like so dark, like so bassy, so it's like post-punk or something, and it just feels like you could go from you know, Yeezus obviously has a lot of trap influence, but you could go right from Yeezus to XI and it would make sense.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I wish I was a DJ or something, you know, I think, you know, that'd be a rad thing to mix together, but you know, you're right. You know, trap is, or you know, was, I agree with you. It's run its course by now, but you know, at the time it was very exciting and it did have like this, experimental, you know, I think post-punk is a good way to describe it. And yeah, like I think XI like fits into that, you know, world pretty well.
Yeah. It's just interesting that they've been like, they spent a whole decade like just very clearly not giving a shit about what was going on in popular culture. And now it's like they're back or something. Yeah. And they're like reinvigorated by it. All right. So we got to talk more about the track structures. Listener Tyler wrote in to say that the primary distinction between pre and post Oversteps AE is an abandonment of song structure. That's not to say there's no structure anymore, but that the structure is a lot more fleeting. Almost all tracks post Oversteps have a sort of wandering feel to them. On XI and beyond, the tracks seem less about tangible loops and way more about texture. The evolution is less about a song becoming a new beast by the end and more about exploring the different variations of the same sounds a synth can make. On the other hand, listener Joe called XI the perfect balance between the longer, more out there experimental jams and the emphasis on composition of Odd-Tekker's earlier work. So what do you think? How would you describe the track structures here? You know, we know that Odd-Tekker went back to editing down very long jams for this album. So do you hear it in the same way that you hear like Choristus's track structures, for example?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the listener that wrote in is correct. You know, the song structure is a lot more loose, you know, post oversteps and everything. You know, we've joked before, Autechre's, you know, the Grateful Dead of electronic music and stuff. And I think that XI like really does feel like that. You know, all the songs do sort of have like this wandering feel to them. You know, it's earlier stuff is like a lot of electronic music where it's, you know, it's kind of a loop. You know, maybe it switches up, you know, a little bit, but it kind of just focuses on one thing and repeats it a lot. I feel like XI, you know, doesn't do that as much. Not to say that it's just like completely, you know, random or anything. You know, there's definitely a structure there. I think it's just much more loose and fluid.
Yeah, I'm kind of conflicted about this, honestly, because it feels like the tracks are very focused in a way at the same time. Like they're wandering, but focused. And I don't know how to like square that, because you think about something like Blade of Loris, right? It is very focused. It's like one thing. And what you're listening to is like the kind of like evolving textures in it, you know, and they kind of like change in subtle ways and kind of drift and float and stuff. But, you know, I sort of noted that like the track 1-1 is like almost the only track here that kind of radically changes halfway, like kind of on a dime in a weird way. Other than that, everything is like one idea and it's sort of floating and drifting, but it like stays right on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes back to, you know, how we started the episode. This is sort of like the record of contradictions and all. I get what you mean. I just think in that like floating, like nothing just is like, you know, here's you know however many bars and then here's those same right. bars, you know, again. It's always like, you know, a synth or some noise or something is always like drifting and floating around, and I think that's where I get like the wandering thing from, because you're right, I think like one is whatever is sort of the only one that does that you know real switch on a dime kind of thing. But then again, I mean, you're right too. Like Blade Loris, like really is kind of a focused sounding track. But it has like that thing I'm talking about, like the sounds, you know, shifting throughout it. You know,
yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to pin down.
Yeah, because like on Choristus, it felt like, and we talked about this at length, but just like it feels like you jump in, things are already underway. And they are on their way somewhere else. And you kind of make like one lateral move from like an A to B kind of thing. And it just like sort of is on its way there when you start. It gets there and then the track like ends pretty neatly. But here it feels like we're not on our way anywhere in particular. You know, it's just sort of like the thing is what it is. And then you just hear it kind of like, you know, it's got that weird, I was talking about earlier, like it's got that kind of like liquidy quality, mm-hmm. like it's mechanical, but also elastic. And it just feels like it's this one single thing and it's getting kind of molded around like Play-Doh or something, but it sort of just is what it is. It is very, very paradoxical. You know, on the note of structure, I want to break our usual order here and talk about the overall structure or flow of the album. You know, several people wrote in to say that XI is super challenging, like listener Tyler, who says, for me, the length was daunting and I always have a really hard time remembering which track is which. XI has, you know, this reputation for being this massive onslaught of tracks. I think Pitchfork says it, quote, fully justifies their reputation for being poor editors. But listener Joe writes, it's excellent as a single album and can be played straight through. But if the two halves were released individually, like Sign and Plus were, X and I, I like that, I think that both would work perfectly fine as self-contained releases with a great flow. I honestly think it works well as four 12 inches too. I spent time listening to XI over the last few days in chunks based on the vinyl track list, imagining that each one was an Envane or Anvil Vapor style release, and each one of them has a satisfying flow and unique identity. So, do you hear any kind of flow to this like 2-hour juggernaut at all? And what do you make of Sean's claim that it's supposed to work like four individual 12 inches? Do you agree with Joe maybe that it just works however you want to divide it up?
To the first question, you know, I don't think that there's like this, you know, this flow to the whole record. I think the whole record itself is like cohesive. You know, we're working in one sort of world. But I think I agree mostly with the listener. I think it really does work kind of best as like these four little chunks, you know, four 12 inches, you know, to think of it that way. You know, like if this is like a collection of, you know, four EPs, I think it's, you know, like four of the best EPs, you know, ever. It's the kind of record that, it doesn't feel like you gotta start at track one, you know?
Right.
You can jump in at points, and I think especially if you jump in, you know, at where the vinyl breakages are, I think it like works very well. I mean, I like it as a full thing, you know. I always mention I always listen to albums, you know, all the way and stuff, and I think it works that way. But you know, I could see why, you know, people who maybe aren't like used to, you know, 2 hour albums and stuff would maybe have a struggle with it. And I think like if you had this on vinyl, it wouldn't be, you know, bad or anything to just, you know, listen to one disc and then, you know, take a break or whatever, or come back and, you know, listen to a different disc or listen in a different order or anything like that. You know, I think it works, you know, maybe better as a, you know, vinyl. But then again,
yeah,
it's hard to say that because the vinyl is like so, you know, if they like really wanted that experience, like why can you not just pick it up in that format? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I honestly got to say that it is a little exhausting to go all the way through it in like one sitting. And, you know, I was doing that a lot at the start of these 2 weeks and just feeling like I was never giving like the last stretch mm-hmm. it's due because I was a little tired. And then I started kind of like breaking it up and thinking of it as these four little sections and feeling like it actually works so well that now when I listen to the whole thing, it doesn't tire me because I take a little mental note. Oh, that's where the disc ends. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that, like reset time. And, you know, and I'm, you know, I'm not insane. Like I'll walk away if I have to go to the bathroom, whenever the fuck I want, but I feel free to take a break between discs, start on one disc whenever I want. You know, I don't feel like it's disrupting anything, and I do feel like it kind of works. But to me, it's like you see them doing this, honestly, with like with LSEC, for example. They didn't have to divide it up, right? It's like only digital, so like why bother?
But yeah.
I think they did because they were like, yeah, it's impossible to listen to the whole thing. I mean, NTS is divided up into 2 hour chunks, but still chunks, right? And you're supposed to sort of think of it as little sections, and it feels like this was their sort of first go at that, right? Where they kind of did divide it up. And so I guess what I'm saying is like it honestly works so well as four little chunks that I can't not think of it as that anymore, you know?
I think obviously like to fit on records, you know, with the track listing, they had to, you know, be conscious of, you know, the times and everything to get it fit. So I think so much you know, work and thought would have had to go into that's definitely, you know, influencing the flow of the record so much that it really, I don't know, I just feel like the record way is the way that this record should be heard.
And honestly, every double album works this way.
Like, yeah, no, exactly.
The Beatles'
yeah.
White Album is designed to be discs. Rolling Stones' Exile on Main Street is designed to be discs. Like you'll hear that it actually like kind of has a starting thing on each disc, and it kind of like concludes in a nice way. Blonde on Blonde is organized mm-hmm. kind of nicely in that way. The Wall, for fuck's sake, is organized nicely as like four sort of quadrants. So you know, this is how double albums just are, and so it just sort of makes sense that it would be
that way.
It's
just something like we really lose, like not even just yeah. on Spotify, but just, I mean, so many of those double albums you just mentioned like fit on one CD, like, you know, Blonde on Blonde fits on one CD, and so right. like that's been so lost for such a long time, I think.
Yeah, and you know, the artists thought about it mm-hmm. when they were
no exactly
arranging.
Yeah,
like they thought you would have to change this. So it might make sense, actually, on this topic to single out a few key tracks. I thought it was interesting that listener Alex called Fleur one of their strongest openers overall, and that listener Ellen wrote, "From the moment that I heard the first few bars of Fleur, I knew this album was likely to be something special." But that listener Espen wrote, "For some reason, the opening track put me off when I first bought the album, and I still have a hard time with it. It has grown on me a bit, but it's still the weakest track for me and a weird opener." So I bring this up as sort of an example. Like, does it change the way you think about Fleur if it's the opening of a 30-minute 12-inch rather than of the whole 2-hour extravaganza, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it does change how you think about it. I think there's a lot less pressure to be the opener of a 30-minute 12-inch than to be the opener of a 2-hour extravaganza, you know?
Yeah, and so like similarly, listener Joe calls YJYUX one of Autechre's best closers ever, but what if it's just the closer of like a single EP, you know what I mean? What if like Blade Aloris is the closer of all of disc one or just that 12-inch, you know, like, does anything else come to mind as like it changes the way you think of a track? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely, you know, if you break it up, you know, it just puts so much less pressure to be, you know, the closer, the opener of, you know, a 12-inch than to be, you know, this 2-hour thing, that I think it makes any of them work better. You know, I think Blade Aloris is like a great closer for, you know, half the record, you know, if it was a CD. And I can't really think of anything else that comes to mind besides those ones, you know, right off the top of my head.
I mean, because I was just thinking, like, you know, Blade Aloris is so fucking epic that it's a little weird that it's in the middle of this album. But then it's magically not weird at all.
No, exactly. If you break it up. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, closing disc one, right? You know, on the other hand, you think about something like YJY, which is it's pretty epic. I mean, it's very epic. It's got like a lot of grandeur to this track. Just these huge bass bombs and like it just has this kind of chugging. Like, I feel like I'm like climbing up some, you know, just impossibly tall mountain or something like that. But it's kind of like, it's still not epic enough to close all of XI. I feel like nothing. I can't imagine what.
Yeah. What would be. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe something like All End, is the only way to like properly close something this big, but as the closer of like disc two or something, it works. And yet as the closer of disc four, it's maybe too epic. Like, we didn't get that big yet to like end on such a bombastic note. You know, it just feels like it sort of like switches up the album, you know, stuff like SPL9, that flowing right into Cloudline, like makes almost no sense to me, but like drawing a line between them makes a lot of sense. It's just like weird how it just made me think of the album in a lot of different ways, because now a lot of tracks serve a lot of different purposes all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean, what you said a second ago is a good point. You know, YJY like maybe is better as, you know, the closer of a disc. You know, not an album or not the full 2-hour album, but you know, more than the 12-inch. Yeah, it's a little hard. You know, there's just so many ways to consume this record that I think they all like influence your, you know, the way you're listening to it.
Yeah, but I do kind of agree in general that each of these like 12 inches, it has like kind of a nice rise and fall. It kind of like does its thing and feels satisfying on its own. Here's an interesting comment from Rob in the 2013 Ask Autechre or Anything, which I'm very sad, by the way, that we are now moving past
the last one, right?
We will no longer have it as a reference. Rob says, determining the track order has differed from release to release, but with XI, they were choice of track grouped in pairs in most cases, optimized for vinyl, then arranged to taste. I was also fascinated by this comment from listener Alex, who writes, I feel like Vecco S and Flep have an interesting relationship. I almost think of them like the Tenet style forwards inverted versions of each other. Vecco S is kind of straightforward and stomping, menacing, clattering until it self-explodes, disintegrates into a cloud in the back half. And then Flep starts with a very similar clattering sound, but all messed up, ripped into pieces. I wouldn't be surprised to learn that Vecco S and Flep share a lot of DNA, maybe fed through the same system from different directions. So what do you think about that? Do you hear like sort of a pairing, doubling thing going on here?
Yeah, I mean, maybe not like a specific, you know, doubling or pairing, but I think they're definitely like similar. Like the listener said, I think they, you know, very easily could have been, you know, from the same kind of, you know, patch or something, and then, you know, one worked on more or anything, because they definitely have like similarities to them. I think that it happens a bit like throughout the whole record. I feel like, you know, on Elevant, which, you know, getting a little ahead of ourselves here, but on Elevant, you know, like Ozla for In, I feel like you hear that, you know, kind of coughing drum sound in little bits, you know, through XI, like it's almost the same snare or, you know, whatever that's supposed to be like used in different places. And, you know, just things like that, I think, happen throughout the record. And like, you know, Rob said, Most of the discs here are two songs, sometimes three. And I think, you know, they definitely like are intentionally paired, you know?
Yeah. I just started, like, I got kind of obsessed with this comment from the listener here about like VecOS and Flep, because they do sound like they have a relationship. Like they're, I think it's weird that they're back to back because they're kind of like the least melodic tracks on the whole album. Mm-hmm. And they do kind of feel like Flep is like the weird blown apart version of VecOS or something. It sounds like we're in the Upside Down or something, listening to VecOS. And then there were like other things that just sort of jumped out to me, like, I don't know, Deco Lock and Rexon seem to be like almost the most overtly hip hop tracks, and they're like back to back. I just kept seeing these pairings and then kind of like getting tripped out because I was like, okay, we got this 2-hour album. Autechre says divide it into quarters and then divide those quarters into halves. And it's like, it's tripping me out, like the structure of this thing, like how it's assembled, like in just little pieces, almost like, hey, the little pixel blocks on the cover.
Hey, good for thought. Yeah, good.
All right, before we get on to our favorite tracks, let's talk about XI's relationship to Autechre's previous work, as we always do. Listener Jordan calls it a bit of everything from Autechre, including their older stuff. And listener Anton says, it sounds like a best of from all the things they did in the past. Listener Steve argues that Choristus and Oversteps were a journey that culminated in the masterpiece of XI, in that Autechre managed to fully assimilate their like classical, music concrete, academic, experimental influences into their b-boy roots, if I'm paraphrasing him correctly. On the other hand, listener Ellen calls XI a return to form only in the sense that Autechre were once again pushing electronic music into new territory. So how do you see XI in relation to the rest of the discography?
You know, I think I agree more with the first listener. You know, definitely they're pushing electronic music into new territory, but I kind of think they've always been doing that, at least to some extent. I think, you know, that this is like fully assimilating, you know, this academic, you know, experimental influence with hip hop and the whole b-boy thing. You know, we've talked about like how great they are at like synthesizing their influences. And I think here they, you know, are synthesizing like two things from like such different worlds and are doing it, you know, so well. You know, we've talked about how the sound design and everything is like so important on this record, and of course, you know, that's what like music concrete and experimental music in general like is often right. about, but it's not, Autechre's not doing it at the expense of listenability, and you know, you're still getting you know, beat, like you said, that there's funky moments here, you know, there's dancey, you know, moments. It's not just academic, and it's not just, you know, b-boy, you know, hip-hop kind of stuff. It's a perfect like assimilation of these different worlds.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that like 100%, because it feels like almost a eureka moment, in the sense that they always knew this, but maybe it just sort of like clicked at this point, but like what they love about, you know, electroacoustic music or whatever, this kind of experimental composition, is the sort of sound design, right? Mm-hmm. And what they love about like old hip hop records is the same thing. You know, you listen to like something like, you know, like old Bomb Squad productions or something, like they are so dense and like they're almost like verging on noise, you know? But it's like what they love about those two things is the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like they realize that there kind of is no distinction. And so, you know, I talked about it before, but a track like Rexon, I feel like this is just the epitome of this, where it is a slamming hip hop track, but it's also like a droney electroacoustic composition. And it sort of like tilts from one to the other slowly, but the like smoothness with which it, you know, it's just seamless the way it kind of like goes between those two worlds. I feel like that's happening all through this record. And just like you said, it can be very funky and groovy, have like great just hip hop grooves to a lot of tracks. But also that attention to sound design is like as magnificent as any, you know, electroacoustic or like music concrete composer. You know, on the other hand, I do kind of see this as like, you know, we haven't talked about it in a while, but like back in the Incunabula days, they had this, I don't know, just this mastery of like this, like songs that felt like they were moving really fast, but also not moving at all at the same time, you know? Mm-hmm. And it pops up a couple times, you know, throughout many of their albums. But, you know, I'm listening to like Blade of Loris, I just can't stop thinking about like Eggshell and that feeling of like I'm floating, you know, there's like a lot of busyness and movement. There's so much movement in that track, like all this like wub-wubbing bass and like the kind of rhythmic pattern of like the weird distortion hiss that we were talking about. And yet there's just something like so just monolithic about like the motionless strings that are hanging over that track that I feel like I'm not moving at the same time. You remember talking about this with like Eggshell and 444 and stuff like that?
Yeah, definitely. And I agree with you. You know, Blade Loris definitely does that same thing. It's like you're, I don't know, it's like being, you know, in orbit or something. Like you know, to yourself are not really moving, but really you're moving, you know, hundreds, thousands of miles an hour, yeah. You know, and the world's spinning, you know, below you kind of thing. It really does like feel like that, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, great to hear that again. I think great to hear the kind of like mechanical, physical object sounds of Tri-Repetae again, even though it is like much more fluid in a kind of like otherworldly way we were discussing. Great to hear like the dirt and grit of Chiastic Slide come mm-hmm. back. Do you hear that?
Yeah, definitely. I think like what you were saying, like how this record like doesn't feel, you know, like just computer in that sense. Like I think because it does use that grit and stuff that you hear on Chiastic Slide. I think this record is like a great melding of the discography up to this point. You know, it's taken little bits, you know, some of the best bits of Tri-Repetae, some of the best bits of Chiastic Slide, you know, some of this, some of that, and you know, put it in the
doing something new with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Something 100% new. It's like if a best of could be
new,
completely new and
yeah,
forward thinking.
Exactly.
Like, what would that sound like?
It's a best of ideas rather than you know,
yeah,
tracks.
Yeah. What do you make of XI kind of developing organically out of the Oversteps and like Oversteps tour setup? By the way, I mean, I think we've talked about this before, but in the Ask Autic or Anything, they mentioned that they have like soundboards for all of the Oversteps tour or something. Pray to God they release that shit. I want to hear it so bad, like so I can hear the missing link, because it sounds so different from Oversteps, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I talked about it. Oversteps is one of my, you know, least favorite Autechre albums, and I think XI is one of my you know, favorites. I don't hear it really at all, but I've never heard any of that tour, so maybe that is the missing link, you know, because the same thing, you know, I don't think Choristus and Oversteps like really sound too similar, and there's that tour in between that's the missing link, you know?
Yeah. It's just, you know, sometimes I hear like maybe a hint of that kind of, we talked about like the blown out quality of the little percussion that is on Oversteps. Something like YJYUX, I can kind of hear as something like a halfway point between over like those noisier parts of Oversteps and XI. But for the most part, I'm just like bewildered at how they were like jamming Overstep sounds, like this kind of like delicate, you know, plinking like classical harpsichord type compositions, and ended up here. Like I have no fucking idea. But all right, let's talk about what your favorite tracks are and why. First, though, gotta quiz you. You know, with the Rate Your Music individual track ratings, a lot of stuff is bolded here. Like almost everything. I'm sure you can guess what the highest rated track is.
Yeah, it's probably Blade Loris.
Yeah, it is. Now, there are, let me count, 1, 2, 3, 4 tracks that are tied for second place. So see if you can get one
four
of those.
Four tracks tied for second. Oh, man. I mean, I'm just basically going to guess. I'll say Rexxon. That might be one.
Actually, no. It is bolded, and it's just 0.1 below, but the second places here are Earlight, TSXI, 1-1 is, and YJYUX. Kind of surprising, actually. But what are your favorite tracks here?
I mean, obviously, I love Blade Loris. You know, that's sort of Autechre's, you know, hit single, if if there's a 12 and a half minute hit single. It's really hard to pick, because I don't think I really dislike much about this record, but I really like Earlight. I really like 1-1 is. I really like Floor. I think Rexxon is one of the coolest tracks, you know, just because, like we've talked about so much, like this I think that's one of the most perfect meldings of this hip hop and academic worlds, and that's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's hard because I kind of love everything. I love, you know, if I had to pick, like, JadaVC is mesmerizing, like fucking mesmerizing. I mean, it's just like these huge, just lush as hell synth washes, and this kind of like crunchy, like absolutely blown out slamming beat. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just absolutely adore that track. Nodesh, which we talked about, is another one of my favorites for kind of the same reason. It almost seems to share some DNA with JadaVC, but it's got that like lushness. But I sort of jotted down, like, it sounds like if, because it's just like these bursts of like the lushest, most amazing synth sound you've ever heard. And I was thinking, like, this is like if you sat Cecil Taylor down in front of Vangelis's keyboard and he was just slamming on it, but it was like, you know, it's like, I can't get over it. And it's got like the most like stuttery kind of crazy beat.
Yeah, that,
like,
I love that beat.
It keeps you like kind of like it's teasing you. You like want to hear the synth sound again. And it's like taking a long time because you like can't figure out what time signature we're in. And then it like comes in and you're like, oh, sweet release. But, yeah, I mean, it's hard because I kind of love everything, even stuff like, I just feel like Rune Repic. I talked about it earlier, how it's kind of like a cool mixture of like archaic, like modem dialing sounds, but also like the most futuristic sort of like wispy synth squeals or something. You know, it's just interesting because it's short, right? It's like, one of the kind of 4 minute ones that breezes by, but it just feels as packed with ideas as the 10 minute tracks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so love that one. Love, also want to shout out Twin Horizon. Somebody wrote in to say, I think it's Twin Horizon, and I really struggled to pronounce that until I read that, but I think that's right.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, I mean, but yeah, I just want to emphasize like how much I love those little tracks just as much as the juggernauts here. I feel like we got a lot of listeners, listener emails naming like almost half the tracks here as highlights, but I'll sample just a couple. You know, listener Andy wrote, 1-1 is my favorite AE track of all time. I could talk about this track for hours. The mind-bending phaser effects, moments where the bass line just takes over and gets real groovy, a weird catchy melody, and such a dramatic ending. Listener Jeff wrote, 1-1 is really messed with my head. First listen was on headphones, and that repeated hard pan from left to right throughout the beginning gave me a physical suction feeling in my ears, like my brain was being sucked out of my ears. Listener Joe wrote, 1-1 is uses this amazing effect that makes it sound like it's slowly expanding over the first part, almost like one of those pipes screensavers from the 90s, but in bursts instead of consistently. My musical competence is far too low to understand what they're doing there, so perhaps you guys can comment on it. Seems like we've got to talk about 1-1 is and this weird effect in particular. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I wish my musical competence was high enough to really understand that. I don't know. It's almost like you know like a Leslie speaker, like the spinning speaker from an old organ. It's almost that, but it's not quite the same thing.
Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, I thought like it has the kind of sound of like two mono recordings, like one in each ear or something, and they're kind of like phasing. Like they're not exactly synced up, but they're also like kind of, they're going through like sort of a low pass, high pass filter kind of like rotation, but like in different, you know what I mean? Like different speeds. So it's like really disorienting in your head. This would be my guess if I was going to try to rip this track off, how I would try to do it. But I honestly have no idea. And it's just another great example of like the sheer sound of that is like incredible. It's a great track, just like these listeners mentioned, that it has like actually a very sick, like kind of funky kind of like groove to it. It's like almost the most like kind of head nodding groove on the record. Like I can't not sort of nod my head along with it, and yet it's the sound that is the big takeaway.
Yeah definitely.
So we also got a lot of praise for SPL9. Listener Alex writes, one thing you don't get from the AE live recordings is just how punishingly loud their shows are. And I feel like SPL9 captures something of the casual disdain for comfort levels that this Autechre concert goer experienced at the 2015 Brooklyn show. Praise for Cloudline, one of listener David's favorites, and one that listener Joe calls a more advanced version of Zeiss Contra-Rex. Sean also says it's his current favorite in the 2013 Ask Autechre Anything. Nodesh, Rex On, and of course, Blade Aloris. Any Thoughts on any of these?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about most of them already. I love that beat on No Desh. I mean, you know, we went on about it, but it's just the coolest thing. You know, Rexxon, great. Blade Loris, amazing. Yeah, I think we just basically already hit on most of them.
Yeah. I mean, one more can you say? I am sort of appreciating, though, honestly, that like Zeiss Contra-X is my favorite track on EP7. And then I feel like they kind of do like a poor man's version of it on Draft. And then now I just kind of feel like I think of Zeiss Contra-X every time they do a track where like static becomes rhythm. Mm-hmm. And that happens a lot on this record. And I'm just starting to appreciate that like Autechre must have felt like that was a breakthrough, Zeiss Contra-X, because they keep returning to that sound and they return to that kind of thing, especially like on Blade of Loris, for example. And Cloudline for sure, as listener Joe mentions, but like it feels like a real touchstone for them.
Yeah, you know, it does. I mean? It does become like one of their tricks or whatever. You're right.
Yeah, like a signature idea. But I guess here, in contrast to like Draft, it's like they're doing a lot of new things with it, very obviously. And yeah, and I do got to shout out Cloudline for just being like one of those tracks that feels very jammy. Like it feels like it's very like mellow and like sort of slow, but it's got like this kind of soloing quality over it that I really appreciate. I think like Earlight has the same kind of like that bright beaming lead has kind of like a soloing, wandering, like almost jazzy quality to the way it's like kind of searching through the different sounds and chord changes that are going on. Really appreciate that. Perhaps though, we should say a little bit more about Blade of Loris, since it's got this you know, this big stature kind of on the Mount Rushmore of Autechre for a lot of people. We got a real hot take from listener Jeff, who says, I mentioned previously that Sublimit had earned its length, and most long songs on XI, like Earlight and Cloudline, feel the same, though I must say Blade of Loris does not, for me, earn its length. I feel like I'm in the minority on that opinion. I do like it, but I just don't think it needed to be quite as long as it was. So what do you think about, you know, Blade of Loris' length in particular, and just maybe the use of such long tracks here in general?
You know, I think he is in the minority there. I think it earns its length. I think it's interesting enough. I think it changes. I mean, like we talked about, I think it has that like that weird, you know, contradiction again, where it feels static, but there's also like something, you know, moving by you so much. I think the links on this record in general all work pretty well. I think they do a good job of, you know, thinking of it as these four 12 inches, but not just, it's not always just, you know, one song on one side, you know, another song on the other. You know, they break it up with a couple of these shorter, you know, 4-minute tracks, and we get, you know, two songs on one side and you know, one on the next and all. I think they do a great job of not overdoing it with, you know, it would have been really easy, especially thinking of it as 4 12 inches, to just do, you know, however many songs, you know, all of them are 10, 12, you know, 8 minutes long or something. I think it was, you know, a great idea to break that up and use these, you know, there's some 4 minutes, some, you know, there's 3.5 minutes here, you know, in between some tens and twelves and nines and stuff, you know, I think it's really, like broken up very well.
Yeah. I mean, I personally could live in Blade of Loris forever. But I do feel like it's actually not that long. Like it's not as long as it seems, because it kind of turns into like an ambient drone for the last,
it's kind of two
minutes.
Songs. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and obviously they use the same, the Blade of Loris kind of like chord for all end. So I would be really curious what listener Jeff thinks about, if he thought Blade of Loris was too long, how does he feel about one chord from Blade of Loris for an hour? Oh yeah, I forgot to shout out. I wanted to shout out a Floor as well, which we didn't really address it, but I agree with the listeners who think it is kind of an incredible opener. I love that it's like Fluttering Madness, but then it turns into this bass groan and has that kind of like, all of a sudden we're in slow motion quality as well. Didn't want to forget about that. Are there any weak points though for you? I guess I could quiz you, because there's only a couple. Maybe you can guess one track that is not bolded here.
That's not bolded. Man, it's so hard. One, it's hard to like remember which songs which with these stupid names.
I mean, only five are not bolded.
Only five not bolded. I'll say Prac F.
You're right. That is one not bolded. It's that one. It's Flep. It's Twin Horizon. This is a crime against fucking humanity. No Desh. I cannot believe that.
Oh, that's crazy.
And Rune or run repick or whatever. But are there any kind of lowlights for you?
You know, it sounds like a cop-out, but I really do enjoy the whole record. I guess the one that doesn't surprise me as much is the one, I guess, Prac F. I think it is the more... I mean, it's hard to even say anything bad about it because I don't really... I'm reaching for you know, a negative here. I really don't. I really don't think anything's a low point here. I really enjoy basically everything.
Yeah, you know what's weird is, like, I get that there's maybe not a lot going on Prac F, but it's got the kind of choristist quality of, like, if you don't like something, like, sit tight, it'll be over
exactly,
in a minute, and there's
exactly.
a lot more to come. But I also kind of felt like, you know, I started thinking, like, okay, Prac F, not my favorite, but it's got kind of a cool, like, just sort of perfect transition into Jada VC, which is one of my favorites, and I just sort of thought of it as, like, you know, one of these pairings, like, almost like two tracks that belong together. You know, almost like a multi-part kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then what I realized is I spent a lot of time listening to this record on shuffle. And there is something about the way these tracks are constructed that they often, like, have such hard cuts between them that it sounds like everything flows into everything else perfectly, sort of. Like, you feel like, oh, I'm going to lose these great transitions if you listen on shuffle. But actually, you get new great transitions. And, like, Prac F hard cuts into anything else, pretty much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think they're pretty good at doing that, you know, like just making these, like, transitions that you know, feel so great, but you're right, you know, they're still a you know, shuffleable you know, group.
Yeah, I will say that for me the low point, if I had to pick one, is Veco S and Flip, which, like I mentioned, are the two, like, most tangled mess of a track. And there's something about, like, the dirty grittiness of this record that it makes it, like, what you want to focus on is kind of the overall texture. You know, I was sort of, like, reminiscing of the days when we were reviewing, like, Autechre's early albums, and I could actually write down every sound that's on it.
You know,
I would, like, I would comment about every single sound, like, and now it's no longer possible, especially with this record. And it's such a dense mixture that, I mean, that's what's fun. You could listen to, like, a lot of these tracks forever, and you keep hearing, like, kind of new things in that, like, dense murk. But there are tracks like Veco S and Flip that are just, like, so tangled where there isn't an overall texture to just sort of let wash over you, and it feels like you're supposed to pay attention to the details, but I can't hear them. And I just feel like it's almost a shame that they come back to back, because it's, like, a pretty long drag, like a 12-minute long drag there a little bit. Do you agree with me at all on that?
Yeah, I get you. I mean, you know, like the listener said earlier, I think it is, like, they're from the same DNA and all. So maybe it's cool to have them back to back, because that kind of points that out. But I mean, also, like I said, I think there's other things, like, throughout the record that's not back to back, you know, that sort of references or is from the same DNA of other things and the things from Elevent and stuff. So you're right. Yeah, maybe that does drag that little section just a bit. I mean, especially being kind of in the middle of this giant album too. It's just sort of the point where, like, maybe you're gonna drag.
Yeah, it's just like when you're listening on shuffle, it almost, like, fixes that problem completely because they don't come back to back. But there are tracks that are just, like, denser and, like, with very little melody going on, and they work in little spurts. But I just feel like it's such a long time to spend in that territory. We didn't hear a lot of lowlights from listeners other than Jeff, who, in addition to calling Blade Aloris too long, wrote, "I don't care for Nodesh and Rune Rupik. I hear a lot of people refer to those as AE's take on footwork. If this is the case, I don't care for footwork." I got to say, I love the hot takes. You know, I really do, because when listeners, like, write in with strong opinions, positive or negative, it makes me kind of, like, my ears perk up and I listen to the track, you know, a little closer, a little differently. So I do love getting these hot takes. You know, we could talk about that, but I also kind of want to return to listener Tyler's comments that I have a hard time remembering which track is which is always a bad sign for me. I really want to love it, and when it's playing, I enjoy it a lot, but when it's over, I can remember very few moments from it. Do you ever feel that way about this album at all?
I mean, when something's 2 hours long and the track titles are, you know, basically file names, I think a lot of people have a hard time remembering, you know, which one's which. I mean, I've been listening to this album, intently, you know, for 2 weeks. And a lot of that is just trying to memorize, you know, which song goes with which, you know, file name. So in electronic music and stuff, I don't think, like, normally, if it wasn't for this podcast, you know, obviously to talk about a song, you know, everyone has to know which one you're talking about, so you have to memorize the titles. I think before doing this podcast, I just basically ignored the track titles for Autechre, you know. I don't think that really comes too into play, really, with all electronic music.
Yeah, I mean, I do understand having that feeling that, like, it's a blast while you're listening, and then afterwards, it's hard to remember, like, what all you heard or what was what. This record definitely has that kind of quality. I mean, I will say that I spent enough time with it that I now, like, I had this kind of problem with Choristus, but it wasn't really a problem. It was just that, like, every track is so short, and so, you know what I mean? Like, where it's just like, I don't remember which track is which necessarily, but I know that I have a blast listening to it. And if I don't, it's over in a minute anyway. You know, you spend more time with the tracks here. So it doesn't have that same kind of, like, exact quality, but I do feel like I kind of got to know every track and that everyone has, like, a really distinct identity. So I guess my take would be that if you spend maybe a little more time with it, they actually will stick in your head. But although it is a lot of work. So we've talked about the overall flow, the artwork, the musical context, and all the other stuff we usually get to at the end here. So might as well just wrap it up. How did it go with XI these past 2 weeks? How would you sum up your feelings?
I had a great time. You know, honestly, I had been looking forward to it. You know, XI is a record I've liked for a long time. And one of the like negatives of this podcast is always, like, you know, focusing on one record and then, you know, always having that itch to, like, go to a favorite or something and then, you know, having to resist it. And you know, this week was, especially after Oversteps, which you know, I said is by far, you know, not one of my favorites, you know, it was nice to spend time with one I wanted to spend time with.
Yeah, and one with, like, so much to listen to.
You know, yeah,
I was
exactly.
Kind of feeling like, usually when we're about ready to record, I am, like, more than ready to move on to the next album, you know, because I'm very disciplined about only listening to the album that we're going to talk about, not peeking ahead at the discography. But, you know, this time I felt like I'm still loving listening to XI. There's so much more to hear, I feel like. Every time I hear it, I hear new stuff. You know, do you think that's, like, a quality of the album or just because there is literally so much here, you know?
I mean, I think it's both. I mean, there being so much is a quality of the album, you know, because it's not even just that there's 2 hours or, you know, so many songs. It's just within those songs, you know, there's so many layers and little different things. But that's what makes a 2 hour album interesting and interesting for, you know, so long. I mean, a lot of times, any record like we reviewed, you know, even outside of Autechre, you know, in our other podcasts and stuff, it's easy to get, like, really sick of an album when you're listening to, like, nothing but that, you know, for 2 weeks, or at least, like, mostly that, and very intently, like, for 2 weeks. That can kill a lot of things. But I mean, I feel like XI, same way, like you just said, you know, if we waited another week to record this podcast, like, I think I'd still be, you know, learning stuff and finding new little things and everything, you know, like, I'm not sick of it at this point.
Yeah. And, you know, on another note, you know, we talked about listeners saying that it's, like, overwhelming or it's, like, too much. A lot of reviewers said that, you know, for me, it's, like, not, it's the opposite of challenging. It's generous. Like, they're giving you so much, like, so many sound worlds to explore. And you know, I was, like, listening to, I sort of, like, wrote this down. I was listening to, like, Run Ripik, right? And just thinking about, like, Pitchfork's, you know, complaint that they are not good editors or whatever. And I was like, okay, Run Ripik is not, like, by anybody's standards, like, a highlight of XI, but who would not want this? Who would listen to this and be like, I wish this wasn't here. You know what I mean? Like, I wish they edited this out. Like, who would listen to any track on this record and be like, wow, thanks, but no thanks, Autechre, take it back.
No, exactly. I mean, I think that's what, like, becomes so good about, like, this data dump, you know, thing they get into from Choristus, you know, and then now and to today is because I can't think of like any of those songs on any of these things where I'm like, I just wish that did not exist. You know, it's always like you said, like even the songs that aren't the best, you know, they're over in a couple minutes and on to the next thing. And nothing is like bad. You know, I mean, honestly, and the whole discography, I can't think of like a song that I want to turn off, you know, or want to switch the track or anything. It's always, I mean, the more Autechre, the better, I feel like.
Yeah. Cavity Job, maybe.
Well, yeah, I forgot about that.
But the last question, though, is like, does the size of the projects to come, LSEC and NTS, even AE Live, rob XI of some of its power? You know, does it feel a little quaint now? It used to have this reputation as like this mammoth, you know, this juggernaut, this monster, but it no longer is. You know what I mean? Does that hurt XI at all?
I think if it, like, say you came to Autechre for the first time, you know, during NTS or LSEC or something, and then, you know, you work your way back, I feel, you know, obviously XI is not going to feel as big, but otherwise I think it's just a good stepping stone, you know, kind of thing. Like they've built into these things. I think if you went from just regular length albums, you know, straight into 8-hour albums or 6-hour albums, that would be a much crazier jump. And also, you know, Choristus was sort of the dry run on this. They gave you the record, you know, Choristus itself, if you just wanted the regular album. But if you look at the whole, you know, expanded universe of it, you know, with Quadrain and the digital exclusive EP, it's much longer than this. And, you know, I feel like they've been working to this direction already.
Yeah, I kind of decided that, like, the thing about, and I'll have to like return to this thought once we actually get there, but like the thing about LSEC and NTS and stuff is that they're really stretching out. Here there are as many ideas as there are on LSEC, even though LSEC is a lot longer, you know. There's a kind of a real density of ideas on XI that makes it like just as rich as LSEC or NTS, you know. And we'll talk about it, obviously, but I appreciate that they're stretching out and that you get to hear so much more. But it's like, you know what I mean, it's not anything lesser than LSEC or NTS.
No, definitely. I think it's just a different thing. You know, Autechre's, like we've talked about, is not like one to repeat themselves. And I think people just kind of get caught up in that length. I think just like where they've moved into, like, artistically, has become like where that length thing is become important, you know?
Yeah. It's just funny that to think, like, now I think of XI as like very precise, actually. Like, it's very, very, very concise, like neat little package compared to what was to come. Mm-hmm. So if you feel like those are too long, maybe you'll like XI. All right, we're ready to move on to L-Event?
Yeah. Autechre released the L-Event EP on October 11th, 2013. That's 8 months after XI, though Sean explains that L-Event was meant to come out first and Warp decided to flip the order. As I mentioned earlier, Autechre conceived of the entire project as a series of 12 inches, and L-Event was the one that didn't fit, according to Sean, so that becomes a separate entity. In a 2013 interview, Rob describes the EP as a little bit more rude, a little more aggressive, and says that an EP gives a shorter exposure time, so you're able to hit people with slightly more extreme stuff and not take too much of a toll on anyone. L-Event is supposed to be interchangeable with any of the 12 inches on XI, but Rob also says that it's meant to be supplementary or augmenting the album in one way or another in the Ask Autechre or anything. The guys refer to the project as 2.5 hours of music, and there's a space for L-Event in the XI box on vinyl, so maybe it's meant to be the fifth EP instead of replacing anything. We'll do our best to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah. In regard to reception, it's almost the mirror image of XI, I think. Critics who thought XI needed editing praised the precision of L-Event. This quote from Resident Advisor sums it up well, I think. Where XI's delights risk being suffocated by the sheer weight of the thing, This more svelte package gives space for these remarkable tracks to breathe. On the other hand, most who love the size of XI seemed a bit underwhelmed by this one. On Rate Your Music, for instance, where XI is pretty beloved, Elevent is near the very bottom of Autechre's EPs. I think it's just above the digital exclusive EP. And hey, I'm actually just realizing that Elevent has the distinction of being the last Autechre EP to date, maybe forever. We'll see. One last bit of trivia before we get started. In the Ask Autechre Anything, Sean is asked where to listen to Elevent for maximum impact. And he says, on good headphones, but for track one, on a roller coaster. On track two, a ghost train. For track three, a maze of mirrors. And for track four, the beach. So there you have it. Confirmed, the only right place to listen. What was your opinion, Dan, of Elevent before these past 2 weeks?
You know, I've always liked it. I've thought of it as an extension to XI. Again, that was like when I really came into loving Autechre and stuff. So I guess it, you know, holds a place. It was the first like EP that I heard really as it was coming out and stuff. So it kind of holds a place for that. So yeah, I've always enjoyed it.
Yeah, you know, we do this other podcast. We haven't done it in a little while because we've been sort of overwhelmed with this one, but it's called Pop Shield. And we did an episode on like the, whatever it was, the 30th anniversary of Warp. And we each picked like something, like a little hidden gem from Warp's massive output. And you picked Elevent EP. This was a couple years ago, I guess. And we, you know, went in depth on it. And that was the first time that I had ever like spent a lot of time with it. But it was just interesting that I had already done like a big deep dive on Elevent. You know, the thing with this podcast is like I've rarely spent so much concentrated time listening to something, but this is actually the second time that I've spent a lot of concentrated time with Elevent. And I will say that it's one that I do really like. How would you describe the overall sound? And do you think it has its own character, like kind of distinct from XI, as Sean and Rob seem to think? Do you hear that more rude, more aggressive sound that Rob describes?
I think it very much like sounds of the, you know, world of XI. I think it's made with like a similar palette or the, you know, similar equipment or stuff. But I think it is like more aggressive, like they say. I mean, you know, Oslo for In with that like coughing snare thing through it is pretty, I think, aggressive and a bit more maybe than anything on XI.
Yeah, I mean, for me, there's something about this that is very different from XI. You know, I mentioned that I listen to like XI on Shuffle a lot, and I listen to like kind of a playlist with XI and Elevent on Shuffle a lot. And you could just immediately tell that you're on a Elevent track, not because I had come to know them, but because it sounds so different to me. I mean, these tracks are a lot more abstract, I think. Like, you know, Tac Lacora is just shifting over and over again. Like it doesn't have like that singular idea thing that XI has. It just like keeps shifting, and you know, every track feels pretty amorphous, like directionless and not really focused. Like, I don't know, just very, very, very abstract. I also think it's a lot more like booming. You know, we didn't talk about this, but XI does not have a lot of low end. Like it's part of that like kind of gritty dirtiness to it. A lot of the kicks are like really tight and kind of light, actually. I'm always like amazed at how light the Blade Aloris beat is. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
feels like the biggest, hugest wall of sound. And yet it's just like a little pitter patter of a drum going over it. But here, like the bass is booming. It's huge. Just a lot of big low end and maybe even like more of a high def quality. Like it doesn't have the grit and the dirt that XI has. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it definitely has less grit and stuff. I didn't really think about the bass, but I think you're right too. And that, you know, kind of gives it a bit of a more like aggressive quality.
The question is, if these are the more aggressive tracks, then what the fuck is SPL9 doing on XI? Why was that not too aggressive for XI when it's more aggressive than anything here?
Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to ask Autechre or anything.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't really fit because this does have kind of a nice flow, as we will talk about. You know, we heard from listeners like David, who calls Elevent one of their strongest EPs, and Jordan, who says, I predict you won't care much for Elevent. It's okay. No one really does, but I'll defend it. He says it's got to be played in the dark for it to make sense. But also from listeners like Espen, who says it's a mixed bag, just B-sides and leftovers from the XI era. So before we talk about how Elevent relates to XI, I'm curious if you think Elevent stands on its own with its own kind of journey and flow, or if it is just assorted extras.
I think as much as I like Elevent, I think it is a little bit just assorted extras. You know, it stands on its own in the sense that, like you just said, you know, sonically, it's a little different. It's less grit, you know, more bass kind of thing. But I think we're still in that XI world, and it does, like, this feels like, if you're real into Autechre, you know, you'll want the fifth disc, you know, the bonus EP kind of thing. But your, you know, everyday listener maybe could do without it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me it's like there's something about the it seems like that funk is missing from this release, you know, like almost entirely. And we talked about how a lot of the tracks on XI are kind of like walking that line between music concrete or like electroacoustic composition and like pure slamming 80s beats. This feels like an assortment of tracks that tilted way toward the electroacoustic
composition, that's true,
end of things. And in that, they kind of fit together and they kind of hang together. You know, I was listening to like Oslo for N, and I was just, like sort of dawning on me, like, this is just an electroacoustic composition. Like, this is, if you ever wondered what Autechre would sound like if they just like totally went for it and made like a Parmigiani piece or like an Oliveros piece, you know, like, this is what it would be. And I started thinking, like, is Elevent the most experimental Autechre release ever?
It might be, you know, I think people are like quick to give that, you know, title to like LSEC or something, or maybe even NTS, like just because of the breadth of it. But I think you might be right because, you know, Oslo for In like is a electroacoustic track, you know, you're completely right.
Yeah. And even like, I mean, Tackle Cora is like just buzzsaw insanity. M39 Defane, you know, it sort of like starts out with this kind of clattering, like loud clanging kind of beat, but then it sort of like turns into this weird slow creeping thing. Like I was like writing in my notes, like sounds like oozing lava or something. Like it's so abstract and amorphous, and it's actually incredible how smoothly the EP gets to pure electroacoustic territory with Oslo for N. And then it kind of emerges out the other side with Newbound with like kind of a sort of pretty, but still still pretty abstract kind of like wash of a piece. So I just started feeling like it can't just be extras. I mean, maybe it is just in the sense of like these tracks didn't fit on XI. They're too experimental or something. They don't walk that, they don't strike that same balance that XI does. And yet Elevent deserves to exist because it might be the most experimental Autechre album, and it's pretty concentrated on being the most experimental Autechre album.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to speak to it being like extras, I'm sure that there weren't just four tracks that didn't make it on XI, you know?
Right.
And so I think they, just like those, the, you know, if you break XI up into these 12 inches, I think they purposely picked, you know, four songs that go together very well, and it just, you know, happened to be that they chose to showcase, you know, their more experimental side in this disc. And I think that's why, you know, maybe they thought it didn't fit on XI, or, you know, even Warp didn't think it fit on XI, is because it does go in that direction more. So I think in that sense, like, it does work better as a standalone little EP, you know, kind of thing, rather than being just disc five.
Yeah, right. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about how it fits into XI. You know, Sean says that it's meant to be switched out with any of the 12 inches from the album, making the whole project this kind of like nebulous mix and match game. But we heard from listeners like Anton, who interprets each disc of XI as one of the stages of grief and calls Elevent an optional epilogue, like a bittersweet ending. At the same time, I've seen several people say it's supposed to be EP1 in the set, like come first. So did you try mixing and matching? Did you try tacking it on to the beginning or the end? You know, like, where is Elevent supposed to go?
You know, it's easiest to say that it just goes at the end, I think, because, you know, you just stick it on, you know, it came out right after it. You know, if you have the box set thing, you put it in the end. I think that's the easiest way to say it.
But we know they wanted to release it first, so.
Yeah, which is strange because I try to think of, if people have a hard time getting into this record and think, you know, Floor is maybe a difficult intro. If Elevent was stuck at the beginning of that, it would be even more difficult. So I don't know. And then, you know, if it's supposed to switch out, I don't think it's a great thing to stick in the middle anywhere either. I really don't know that I agree with him, on the switch something out. I think it really works best just at the end, you know, put on, you know, if you're going to put it as a part of XI.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard because I tried swapping it out with all the different, you know, discs here. And that is like Sophie's choice, I'm telling you. Like,
yeah, I know which one you get rid of. Yeah, exactly.
And then, I mean, it's obviously not permanent. Like, you could do it as many times as you want, but it's like that's a tough decision. You know, I was thinking like, okay, well, VecOS and Flep are like my least favorite tracks, but then I lose fucking Blade of Lore.
Yeah, I know. You're gonna do that exactly. Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah,
so that I ruled out immediately, and it also, you're right, it totally like disrupts things because it is so like abstract, and it's totally bizarre to like go so deep into that territory right in the middle of things. You know, in the beginning, you're right, it's like a totally, what a steep ramp that is to get into this. And at the end, it's weird because like I mentioned how epic YJY
is. It's a good closer.
As a closer, and then Newbound has kind of like a very similar epic closing quality. Like I always feel like I'm, but it's got like more of an ease. I feel like I'm like coming down the hill that I climbed in YJY or something like that. But it still just has this, yeah, sort of like elegiac, like epilogue kind of quality to it. So it feels like it's supposed to go at the end, but it's just like, I just don't know. It poses like an interesting problem that is sort of fun to think about. You know, it's interesting also that the EP numbers now line up with the albums, right? So Move of 10 is the 10th EP, but it's also a companion to the 10th album. Elevent is obviously 11th, and is both the 11th EP and pairs with the 11th album. But from here on out, you know, Hottaker is just going to fold the any EP material into the main project. So do you think Elevent should be thought of as like part of the package of XI? Is XI incomplete without Elevent? Something similar to the way we were like kind of grouping all of the Choristus universe into one big thing?
I don't know. You know, part of me wants to say since Choristus, you know, that's sort of become part of the idea. But I feel like Elevent is kind of the last time that the EP is, you know, like for the fan. It's hard. I don't know if I can really decide.
Yeah, it's hard to, I don't know. I could come up with a good answer. It like seems like it doesn't fit anywhere. But then, I mean, I guess the question, and we'll get to it in a minute, but it's like, do you have any temptation to rank them as one project or not at all?
Kind of not. You know, maybe that solves it. Because in my rankings, I put it as two separate ones. And, you know, we didn't discuss ahead of time like we did with Choristus. So clearly it wasn't at the front of our minds or anything.
Yeah, it's like both within and without XI. I can't quite put my finger on it. In regard to individual tracks, we had listener AT who wrote, "I dare to say that M39 Defane is one of the best tracks the group has ever released." While listeners Jordan and Jeff both wrote in to say that Oslo for N sucks because the coughing sound is so annoying and that it drags the EP down. So what do you think about that? And what are your, you know, favorites, least favorites here, even though I know there's not a ton to choose from?
Yeah, maybe a hot take here, but I like Oslo for N a lot.
Me too.
You know, I enjoy electroacoustic music already, so maybe that's why. I really think like the first time you hear that sort of, you know, coughing sound, it's maybe a little like funny or something. But
yeah,
you know, once you get into it, it creates like this cool rhythm. It's like such a neat, snare kind of sound.
Yes, I was gonna say that. Like it's like I cannot pinpoint it, but at some point the beat makes sense. Like
no,
by the end
yeah.
of the track, the beat makes sense. In the beginning, it really doesn't. Like you're like, what is that hi-hat doing? And then some point, somewhere in the middle of that track, it comes together. It's like very, very masterful.
Yeah, I mean, it like the electroacoustic thing, it sounds, you know, cut up or something. It's hard to pinpoint, you know, what the time signature of it is. As far as, you know, negatives, it's only four tracks, so it's hard to say. So, I guess I don't love Newbound as much as the rest. But, you know, I mean, I really don't have anything like overly negative to say about that track or really anything on the EP. You know, if this is going to be the last disc of XI, I think, you know, New Bound is a lot less good of a closer than YJY.
Right, yeah, as we were talking about, like, does it have all that pressure on it to close the entire project or just this? Yeah, I mean, I feel like it does like maybe spring out of nowhere a little bit, but it's like, I don't know how much further you could go after Oslo for N, and then maybe it's nice to just do a reset and go into kind of like cascading melodic territory. Works really nicely there. I mean, yeah, I just feel like I don't have a bad thing to say about any track here. I don't think, other than Oslo for N, just because of how far out it is, I don't think any track here would be like one of my favorites of the XI era. But I do think they're all great, and they are like genuinely just like boldly experimental, which I appreciate a lot. And I appreciate the journey that the record goes on, from like really wild buzzsawing on Tacklacora all the way to like just the most like peaceful kind of like trot down a grassy hill or something in New Bound. So how would you sum it up? Your feelings on El Event and maybe how it went these past 2 weeks?
It went great. You know, I already sort of had a soft spot for El Event, but I hadn't listened to it in quite a while, so it was nice to revisit it. You know, I like the EP a lot. I think, you know, that experimentalness of it is one of my favorite things. You know, it's nice to have just a 26-minute experimental thing. You know, with experimental music, I think so often it focuses on giant, you know, length and everything. It's nice to get just a little bite-sized version of it for once.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, for me, it feels like it's so cohesive. It's so interesting. It flows so nicely that it's like as strong as any disc on XI. And yet you get four of these bad boys on XI. So it's not like, you know, you see like some of these reviewers like Pitchfork kind of trying to claim that it's better than XI. And I'm just like, well, no fucking way. But it is like just as great maybe as any of the discs there. So, you know, where did XI and El Event end up on your list?
Yeah, I put El Event right at number 10, just above Garbage. Okay. And just below Incunabula. And then XI, I moved all the way up to number 3, below Chiastic Slide and just above LP5.
Okay, so, you know, for me, I put El Event at number 13, so it's like right below N-Vane. You know, again, I think it's like, it's so fantastic. Maybe not the best of their EPs, but it's like, I don't know, great to have. I mean, it's like just a cool, it like stands out, I think. It really does. So I've got it like above EP7, for example, which I think might be sort of a hot take that I kind of even prefer to that. But as far as XI, I got to say, I did it. I put it at number 1.
Oh, damn. Right above Trirepite.
I just, you know, I got to say that it doesn't feel fair, because every time I look at my list, I feel like sort of unhappy about the top spot, because I feel like Trirepite and Chiastic Slide are like tied for me. And just depending on the day, I would pick one over the other. And now I feel like XI is tied with those two for me. So it could shift. And we've mentioned before that we're going to do a little revisiting when we get through the whole discography and kind of like solidify what is our list. But I just decided, like, I mean, this is like the first time we've been doing this podcast that I'm still kind of loving every second of this record and like finding more and more to explore. Like, I would love to continue listening to it. Whereas with Trirepite, I mean, I've probably listened to a lot more in my life overall, but I was still just like, all right, love it, but let's move on. Here it's just like, I just want to live in XI forever. So what is your can you count on your top 10 so far?
Yeah, 10, El Event, then number 9, Incunabula, followed by EP7, Confield at number 7, Choristus, Amber at number 5, LP5 at number 4, XI at number 3, Chiastic Slide, and then Trirepite at number 1.
And I've got LP5 at number 10, then Gantz Graph, Sickly Sweet, Amber, Choristus, Untilted, Confield, Chiastic Slide, Trirepite, and XI. Any closing thoughts on this chapter of the Autechre journey?
No, I mean, you know, like we said, it was a lot of fun. I'm not sick of it. If, you know, if we wanted to take another week before recording this, you know, I'd be in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, don't have a lot to add. I feel like this might have been the gushiest of our episodes so far.
Yeah, probably. All right. Well, what did you think about L-Event and XI? We're doing another listener email episode next week, so send us your thoughts. That is gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Next proper episode in 2 weeks, AE Live. We want your opinions and hot takes on that. gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. And look us up on YouTube. Stay connected to Twitter and Instagram. Both of those are @gonkcastpod. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.